New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We have the happy task of talking about the defense from the Chargers game tonight. Joining me to do that is Alec Boulianis. Alec, how are you doing?
Doing well, Ken. So glad that we got a win. Definitely needed it after that very gross loss to our division rival, the Steelers.
Tough loss. This is a very big win for multiple reasons. A nice statement game against a good team. Always nice after coming off a loss of that type. A game that the Ravens had in hand late. You know, they outplayed LA by a good amount, and also a big tiebreaker game in the AFC wildcard race. So if it does happen that these two teams are tied at the end of the year, which seems a reasonable chance of occurring, then the Ravens will have won the tiebreaker. So that's nice. And it's surprising, but most of the tiebreakers have been determined for the Ravens. There's three big ones, that the most notable being the Steelers and the division still to be determined. But most of the tiebreakers have been decided for the Ravens already.
Right. It turns out three of the seven playoff teams are likely to come from the AFC West. Two of them are likely coming from the AFC North. And then there's just enough room for the division winners otherwise. So we play the AFC West this year. That's why we're playing this game. And, yep, we're getting all those things out of the way as far as figuring out seeding. Beat the Broncos, now beat the Chargers. That's really positive news as far as wild card seeding goes. And then hopefully we can win the division and get a higher seed than that.
Right. Well, that would be great. Still, the two seed is still a possibility. It's interesting that if you look at FTN, which is the DVOA-based look at the thing, they have the Ravens at a 73.1% chance to win the division still. Yeah. And the Steelers only 26.7, which seems a little high. And I understand DVOA is highly scaled currently to the Ravens being a tremendously elite team. They're second in DVOA. They're in fact closer to first, the Lions, than they are to third, Buffalo. And they were, for most of the year, they were the runaway number one team. But that basic rating says that they're more likely to win each of these games. We maybe don't completely believe that in the same way. I think after seeing the Ravens expose some tremendous weaknesses.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's definitely, like I was saying right before we started the show, the team definitely gives me a little heartburn. I never feel terribly comfortable going into a game, and it takes until we like really kind of secure our footing and the offense seems to be humming for me to start feeling a little bit more at ease. At this point, the defense seems to be collecting small wins here and there, which is, the point of tonight's show. So that's exciting. You have to try to like see those small wins for what they are, and hopefully, over the next couple games, we're able to gear up and become a much more formidable and complete team.
Yeah, and that I think the last 2 weeks in particular, with the realignment of the secondary, which we're going to get to in the next segment, very significant in terms of putting this team back on the right footing, giving them a chance to excel defensively. If you look at the DVOA, they're an average defensive team. They're 15th in the league, which actually, that's not bad at all. I mean, this team with the kind of offense they have, which is a historic offense, really should be able to make a deep run in the playoffs, I would think, with a league average defense. I'm just not convinced that, exposing themselves in the way they currently are, and in particular with the problems they have on the interior defensive line right now with Jones and Pierce both dealing with injuries. Pierce actually on IR and Jones obviously, wounded, walking wounded, but continuing to play through it. Those are situations they need to have resolved by the playoffs. And I hope we have 1.5 of them back for the playoffs instead of what really kind of feels like 0.5 of them now.
Yeah, for sure. That would be absolutely huge. I was so pleased to see that they called up Tupou. And we had, you know, the five defensive linemen for once. I think that in combination with potentially adding a back end piece or, you know, getting healthy again with Mollett, for instance, you know, continue to play around with Stevens and, you know, just personnel. I mean, everything's on the table as far as the personnel, which I like. I like the way they've been able to adapt. You even saw it mid game, how they were able to adapt the linebacker situation.
Yeah.
So they're definitely, you know, learning on the fly and they are improving. And that's the good news. It does give me hope. It really does. And because they were talking about it on the broadcast, like there's too many pieces that are similar to last year for it to be this much worse. It just doesn't like completely make sense. So it's hopeful that they can start coming around.
Then they did hit on all the defensive coaches lost, that, you know, yep. Denard Wilson and Anthony Weaver and whatnot. Yep. So yep. McDonald, of course. They've beaten some top DeVoa teams this year. They've beaten Buffalo's the number three team, the LA Chargers number eight team. I can't believe this, but Denver is the number 10 team in
That's
DVOA.
Crazy.
Ravens rolled over them 42-10, brushed them aside like they had a rookie quarterback or something.
Brushed over Buffalo too, right? Like, I mean,
they did. They brushed away Buffalo. And I'd say they brushed away the Chargers pretty badly. They spotted them a 10 spot, and then they really destroyed them after that.
Truly, yeah.
Tampa Bay is 13th, and similar, spotted them a few points, steamrolled them after that. Washington, not dissimilar again, same 30-23 final. And again, a game that got closer, a little bit closer later, but they outplayed Washington pretty significantly. They did lose to Kansas City by 7. Big test coming up against the Eagles, who are the number 5 team in the league by DVOA this week. So I think a lot of people look at this 9-2 Eagles team and say, this is another juggernaut. They probably equate them in a lot of ways to the Ravens, running game, option quarterback, et cetera, et cetera. The Eagles have accomplished a lot of what they've done against some of the lesser teams in the NFL, as is wont to happen when you play in the NFC East.
Yeah, I think they're a good team. I'm excited to see that matchup. The one thing that I'll say, and the reason why this defense, I think, is so important to the overall success of the Ravens, is the Ravens have shown to play themselves somewhat when they are down mid-game. So we've seen a couple times where they get down early in the game and then they're able to kind of stick to the game plan, get back on track, lean on the run game, not, you know, start playing themselves, and they can get back on track. They can score some points quickly, get a defensive stop, and you're in a good neutral position, and then you can start winning, right? I still have like a little bit of PTSD maybe from the AFC Championship game and even honestly the first game against the Chiefs, where I feel like they just never were like 100% settled, 100% just playing to their ball game. And I think that's a big reason I'm hoping for the defense to step up, is because I believe once the Ravens click on offense, they usually keep clicking and they keep scoring and they're hard to beat at that point. So it's really just a matter of allowing them to get in that rhythm and the rest will take care of itself.
Yeah, very much true. And I think this season has been a narrative breaker in a lot of ways about the offense flipping the switch, and then all of a sudden they score on 6 straight drives and they stop the opponent on 5 of their 6 drives in the meantime. And all of a sudden, you know, there's a 30-point swing in what's going on. It's been a really fun year for that. It's also been, I don't know about you, really fast season for me. It feels like this season just started. And, you know, we're done with 12 weeks. The Ravens only have 5 games remaining. And it's remarkable to me we're this close to the playoffs. Now, I've never had a real fear at any point this year that the Ravens would not make the playoffs after they got to about 3-2 for me.
Right.
So for about the last 8 weeks, I guess it seemed like they're safe.
Yeah, I think so, too. It was a weird start this season with the first 2 losses. And then I think I agree with you that it's been very fast. I think partially because we've had so few rhythm weeks of just like Sunday. There's always been a prime time or, you know, something to kind of throw off the schedule. And we'll have even more of it, frankly, going into the holiday season and the shenanigans with the Saturday and Wednesday game. So even the players have commented on how they haven't had a really easy schedule. Like there's been not much of a groove in that perspective. But kudos to Harbaugh. He always gets the team ready for primetime games and they always seem to win.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, obviously, just posted something today on Twitter about the all-time passer rating leaders for quarterbacks, and Lamar Jackson it stands head and shoulders above all quarterbacks in passer rating on Monday Night Football. And I know a lot of people know about his stats and how great they are, but of all quarterbacks with 200 plus passing attempts on Monday Night Football, Lamar 124.3 is rating after last night. 22 touchdowns, zero interceptions are, of course, the big number. And I think those are well known by a lot of people. And it's not like there aren't other players who played well. I mean, look, Josh Allen's been fine on Monday night. He's 26 touchdowns, seven interceptions. Nothing wrong with that, particularly over the span that he played. But it's only a 107.5 rating. And then, you know, the next guys, it's all good players. Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, Steve Young, Jeff Garcia. Okay, here's a clunker. Stan Humphries at number seven. Jared Goff, Aaron Rodgers, and Patrick Mahomes down at number 10. Peyton Manning at number 11. It's all great quarterbacks. It's a lot of quarterbacks who are headed for the Hall of Fame in that top 11 there, obviously. Some are already there. And he has outplayed them by so much on that stage. It's just truly remarkable. You credit Lamar, the athlete, what's happened. I don't think it's unreasonable to credit some of Harbaugh with getting the team ready to play nighttime games, because they've been remarkable at it. Not as good on the road as they have been at home. So this was a nice win on the road at a nighttime game. Mm-hmm. But they've been, generally speaking, just outrageously good playing in the evening.
They have been. And I think the teamwork has been pretty good, too. There's definitely a couple plays, you know, particularly by Henry, where he stepped up and kind of got the train back on the tracks. And honestly, there's been some crazy good catches from the big three. Zay Flowers had great sideline awareness. Bateman was able to haul in a crazy catch. And then Andrews with a catch, which was like the weirdest incompletion I've ever seen in my life from the initial call. But yeah, that was there's definitely getting big plays from the big guys. And Lamar's just special. It's so easy to get used to it and not to talk about how special it is. But this is literally a Hall of Fame season career we're witnessing, and one of a first ballot one, in my opinion. So truly special, and can't take that for granted.
Right. I would agree entirely. Couple of big subplots in this game. One was that the defense really held up their end the coverage really held up their end of the pass defense partnership again. Second straight week that they gave up a pretty juicy opportunity set. The Steelers had a pretty good one. Actually, that's not really true. The Steelers, they got good pressure in the Steelers game. And they still, the secondary came through with an even better performance relative to the opportunity set. That's what I meant to say. This game, they gave up a very juicy opportunity set to Herbert, and he couldn't do a lot with ample time and space. And that really led to him underperforming his opportunity set. But a lot of that, that's credit to the defense. Some of it was drops, and there was a big long miss down the seam to really on a post route to Palmer that got missed. You're not going to hit every one of those. So, you know, you're allowed to luck out once in a while. Some of the play by Quentin Johnston was pretty bad.
Yeah, 0 for 5. I know if you look at the box score, you can kind of see a big hole in the production. And it was Quentin Johnston 0 for 5, and then Palmer 3 for 8. And the Palmer one, you know, like you said, there's a couple of those passes that were unlucky or not, high chance to get completed anyways. But they were really the momentum killers. You know, you look at McConkey, he was perfectly efficient. You look at Disley, same deal there. And a lot of the tertiary pass catchers and weapons were all pretty consistent for them. So you can even see it on the high leverage downs, you know, third down, them going to those two guys and getting the incompletion sometimes where it should have been completed. And those are like basically penalties, you know, they don't, they're not as easy to track as, penalties as far as drive killers, but, it is a drive killer, you know, and, The Ravens have got bailed out a couple times from that.
The Palmer did get the DPI in the end zone, so although that wouldn't show up in his stats, but it was a big play for them to get them back in the game with just under a minute to go, I guess, when that occurred. there, a couple things are talked about. First of all, obviously, this is the Harbaugh, and it was a big, they made this into a big story. A couple things really struck me about the Harbaugh. The first was that John Harbaugh is older, and he looks way younger than his brother. And it's just, there's just some differential aging thing going on that's not good. The other thing is, Jim Harbaugh acts a lot older as an NFL coach. Like, yeah. He's just not with it as far as understanding the math of the game. I guess let me take a step back and soapbox for just a second. If you talk to any mathematician about the game of football, every NFL coach is somewhere on the cowardly scale in terms of how aggressive they are. Mathematicians generally like you to go for it on fourth down a lot more. The math completely supports it. You know, you basically this. We've seen the trend that basically squarely puts this within the purview of mathematicians too, by the way. Trend of the game is go to what the mathematicians are saying the last 25 years. Okay. So what happened in this game? We had Harbaugh make a fourth and one decision at his own 16. Let's start with that one. Okay. Yeah. Went for it. Absolutely obvious choice from a mathematician's perspective. It's a 2.3% increase in win probability. It's not a whole lot on the line in total. It was only about 16% from top to bottom, but 2.3% was the gain from your likelihood of making it. And it was a fairly big bet, playing up for about your 30 year stack at the World Series of Poker, if you want to think of it that way, you know, in terms of how much they had on the line. But it was also a very obvious call. A couple things about this. One is, I think there's very few other coaches in the entire NFL that would have tried it. Staley a couple of years ago when he was a coach of, I think I've got Staley, not Daly, it's Staley, I believe.
Staley.
The previous coach for Los Angeles, San Diego, whatever they were at the time, he did a lot of this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But there's very few other NFL coaches who would have done that. And we have to credit, you know, John for being outside of the herd and doing that, but also it's a freaking obvious play. I mean, it just, and the other thing I kind of find funny about it is people asking him after the game, why did you do that? And he does not need to have an answer for that question other than my headset elf told me to.
Yeah, okay. Right.
Basically, it really, that's enough is for him to say, look, the guys upstairs told me it was a big increase in win probability. It seemed to make sense to me based on what was going on in the game. Didn't want to give them the ball back. But any other information I give you is just a justification of the decision we made. The truth of the matter is they told me to do it because it was the right play. I took responsibility for the decision. I did it. That's a perfectly fine answer to that question. Because you don't expect your football coach to understand all the math that goes into that. You really don't. If you're a typical fan, am I correct on that, Alec?
Oh yeah, I mean, unless you follow the Ben Baldwin fourth down to bot.
Yeah. that's a perfect, and there are coaches who probably should follow that,
right?
But it's also the ones who do. It's a process of building up your framework in that. So like a Staley, he's probably used to seeing it all the time. He goes, well, I know basically I've never seen an occurrence where you're between the 10 and 20 yard line with fourth and one, and you wouldn't want to go for it.
Yeah.
I've seen hundreds of these looked at, and then, you know, you have a framework for that, and then you understand what it is. It's just like in anything you become skilled at, your tribal understanding of the thing, you know, from when you first got to learn these things and didn't completely understand how it worked, but you knew what you're seeing regularly in terms of what the answer was, that tribal understanding is what would lead you to the correct answer in these cases. So
what I thought was interesting is earlier in the game, it was still 7-0. We had a fourth and five at the 21 in the first quarter, 2-11 left, which was a medium go for it, 1.3 win percentage. And I remember being a little bit surprised by that, right? Just thinking to myself, you know, it's 5 yards, not one, right? It's a little bit more. But it just shows you, I mean, that example right there shows you how incredibly cowardly, honestly, most coaches are. They should be going for it all the time, frankly. And I've definitely gone that way. It's kind of a joke at this point where I'm like, yep, go for it. Just four down football. And it completely changes the way you call third down, right? So like when you fully embrace it, it actually becomes even more powerful, in my opinion. So anyways, that'd be fun if, you know, some coach that had the proper management, right? The correct owner that would allow him to just go for it, and the right personnel, it could really turn the league upside down. I mean, I know Staley was trying to be something like that at one point, but I don't know if he had the horses. You know,
make no mistake, this team that the Ravens have, great offensive team in general, where the bot probabilities are all based on an average NFL team.
Yeah,
at least right. I believe they are. I don't think they're based on. Okay, and you have the Henry Lamar mesh point to always throw at the other team. They didn't do it on that 2-point conversion, which was bothersome to a lot of people, and it should be.
Yeah,
but it's a great thing to have in your hip pocket. One other decision I want to talk about is the 2-point conversion. They're up 7. They tried to go up 9. There is a lot of discussion out there about that, by the way. If you look on Reddit at r/NFL stat heads, go search for should I go for 2 when leading by 7? And it talks about certain points at late in the game where it's a very large advantage to go up by 9,
yep,
as opposed to just going up by 8. And it was definitely an interesting call because basically the other team had to get 2 scores up 8. If you think of the second play as being almost like a second drive from the 2-yard line they had to succeed on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. But with 9, you actually force them to make an additional onside kick in the situation. So I was lukewarm on the decision at the time, but reflecting on it a little more, and not just going off what I know tribally, I think that was probably a good decision. And I think the Ravens are going to be above average for making that 2-point conversion, given the weapons they have and Lamar in particular. But I liked it more and more the more I contemplated it.
Yep. Yeah. One of our friends that we chat with during games was applauding it. He's like, I yell at the TV every week when there's a opportunity to go up by 9 and teams don't take it. Even earlier in the game where it's not as clear and obvious. But like you said, it can generate another possession that needs to be done. And that's worth its weight in gold from a timing perspective. And like we kind of talked about with going forward on fourth down, it changes the way you approach other drives.
You saw on the other side of this that Jim Harbaugh had 2 of the most cowardly punts in terms of percentile ranking. I don't know if you saw this, but they're both in the 90th percentile rank since 1999 kind of thing. The 4th and 6th from his own 34 was bad. And then the 4th and 18th, he actually, with 6 minutes to go, he actually got called out by Aikman on TV. It was Aikman who was calling the game, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And he called him out right out on TV and said, I don't know why you don't go for it on 4th and 18 here. He's taking a big risk not to go for it. That's the way to think of that, by the way. There's risk in every direction in life. Don't just say punting is the safe choice, because it ain't. It's the safe way to lose if you want to do that, but it's not the safe strategy. It shouldn't be to keep your job. And then the other huge mistake he made was one that has become come to the front of what I would call new wave analytics, is that he went for 1 when they scored with 55 seconds or whatever it was left, instead of going for 2. Huge mistake. You only have to have a 38% chance to convert that to make that a good play. It's exactly how I determine when I see a chart of break-even percentages for certain situations. Mm-hmm. I look exactly to the -8 column on the furthest to the right and see that it says 38%. If it doesn't, the chart's probably wrong. But it's so hackneyed at this point with 40 years of looking at that, that I can't believe that coaches haven't fully adopted it. But they had, it seemed like they mostly had the last few years, and they kept talking about it being the new math of the NFL kind of thing. It's been around forever. It's just the slow adoption of the current set of coaches. We got to get rid of these boomers and bring in some Gen Z coaches and some millennials even who know it better.
But they're not even that much better, man. Like, that's the thing. Like, they're not, because you got guys like Harbaugh who eventually see the light. They're always trying to stay ahead of the curve, and they start being more aggressive. Like I said, I think it'd be cool if teams approached it that way. And roster building is another fun one, right? As well as there's a lot of different ways to hack the game, and there's only so much leash that these teams either have or choose to use.
Roster building, speaking of that, Marcus May cut by the Dolphins today. We'll go through the waiver claim process. I think that actually happens tomorrow. It's determined and released by 4 p.m. They'll say who tried to get him. I would anticipate the Ravens should try and pick him up. He does not have a lot of money on the contract, so it's a very slightly over minimum vet minimum contract, a little bit of guaranteed money. So there's not a lot of risk on the line here, and they really are paper thin right now at the safety position. He's free safety too, by the way, who's been very effective this year in terms of yards per target. He's only given up, he's had 11 targets and 22 yards allowed, so 2.0 yards per target, which is, that's a, you know, absurd. That obviously won't continue, but he's a safety is almost 31 years, who basically you can trust to be in the right position. That's the best thing I can say about him. And if you had him, then you're in a position where Kyle Hamilton then has some freedom to move up front if you want to use him there.
Yep, I would do it in a heartbeat. I hope that they put in the waiver claim, and I hope it's successful. The depth at safety is pretty pitiful right now. Obviously, we cut Eddie Jackson. He's no longer on the team. Marcus Williams is completely untrusted and not playing at this point. Obviously, if there was an injury, he would play, and that would be that. But having the opportunity to bring in May for competition to be able to potentially bring back the big nickel would be huge for this team. The analogy we've been using is, you know, you had a leaky roof with the safety position before, and Kyle Hamilton came to fix it. What you lost was the addition to your house, you know. Yeah. In a world where you can imagine, like, you're renting it out now or something because you have to pay for the roof. So you no longer can use that part of the house, but now at least you don't have a leaky roof, and that's much better. It's what's needed, honestly, at this point. We're talking about a linebacker. They're plugging and playing and trying to figure out what to do with Roquan out. Hopefully he's able to be back against the Eagles. And the safety group, I think they should be continue to be curious about ways that they can improve it. Stevens even played some dimebacker, you know, in this game. There's chips being moved around.
Right. He was on the field in dime packages. They actually align him very differently from a dime linebacker position.
Okay.
But that's one of the funny things about this. But let's talk about the secondary for a little bit, because you got Hamilton moved to free safety. Marcus Williams again played one snap for the second consecutive game. He's on one for one snap of quarter on the second to last play of the half. They gave up an 11-yard play to the right sideline. Didn't have anything to do with him, but you know, having the extra defensive backs on the field, they still weren't able to get a play like that stopped. And then they took him off the field again, and they got another 19-yard completion to get in field goal range, so that was a bummer.
Yeah. One of the best dollars per snap anyone in the NFL is seeing right now.
He's making lots of money per snap. There you go.
$700,000.
Tre'Davious White up to 50% of the snaps in this game. It wasn't like Tre'Davious White had a great game at any point, but he did make contributions. He had a pass defense. He did some other things that were positive in this game. He did let Quentin Johnston get away from him on what might have been a 15 or 20 yard play. I know Aikman said he's going to run for days. That wasn't really going to happen, but he would have had probably 15, 20 yard play that would have given them a big first down at one point. The game would have looked different for him had he caught that ball. But I'm still pretty happy with where he's been through two games. How about you?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, it was a curious amount of snaps, 52%. You start looking at all the other pieces to try to figure out where it exactly came from. And it's not fully at the expense of Stevens, who was at 78%. Yeah. A little bit was of Wiggins, and a little bit of it was Humphrey didn't play one of the snaps.
They played 3.11 corners per snap. Mm-hmm. Okay, so right there, that tells you that's very, very unusual, because in a dime, you'd only play three. And in the four corner dime, you do play four, but then you play a lot of nickel snaps where you should just play three also, or some base snaps where you only play two. Anyway, and they actually had snaps in this game where they only played one with jumbo sets. So they really laid it on with a lot of four corner dime in this game. They didn't have a three safety dime at all, which led to these higher totals. And it meant that they didn't really have to bench Stevens, not in the same way. They took him out for some alternate drives and let White play some. But they also took out Humphrey on the other side and let Armour Davis get some playing time. Not for any particularly good reason. but maybe just because he's been practicing okay. They had him in a little bit in the first half. They had him in a little bit on the final drive of the game, and he came up with a pass defense in the end zone where he actually found the football in the air.
Yeah, he did. I don't know if they're doing any load management at this point for any of these players. It's not enough snaps to truly matter, and they're certainly not doing it with Matabike, but they might be just trying to see what they have. You know, JD's getting close to the end of his contract anyways as well. So, yeah, I think it's something that we'll probably continue to see, particularly when there's leads at play.
Yeah, that's a really good point there, that they, if JD is kind of right now where Cleveland was a year ago, and being stuck at number five among the corners, it might be the appropriate place for him. They certainly bought in Trey White to be ahead of him on the totem pole.
Right.
But you know, on the other hand, you kind of want to see what you have. You kind of want to make him attractive to somebody else. You might be thinking about trading the guy at the end of camp next year. You know, if you had another corner you brought in, I think that could well be true. So
TJ Tampa, for instance. I mean,
for instance, TJ Tampa. Yeah.
Right.
He's redshirted here.
Yeah.
I think the formula they have right now, part of me is like waiting for the shoe to drop on something to go wrong, whether that's an injury at safety because they're too thin there, or a loss of an important corner where the other corners get exposed. So if somebody like, certainly if Humphrey or Wiggins went down, obviously that'd be very, very bad. And the other corners that are there could end up getting exposed by playing more.
Right, for sure. Yeah, Wiggins, I thought, had a good game, and Humphrey obviously is having a career year. Yeah. So,
yeah, great year for Humphrey. Ravens played pretty solidly on third down, I thought, 5 of 14. But then I look at that, and they allowed 2 of 2 on fourth down, which really means that the real way you do this, add fourth down conversions to the third.
This time of year, a good hoodie is absolutely essential. But these days, it's tough to find one that will last through the season. That's why the American Giant Classic Full Zip Hoodie is made to last a lifetime, so you can count on it to bring you comfort and warmth year after year. Slate Magazine called it the greatest hoodie ever made, and from cotton to zipper, it's made right here in the USA. It's crafted with timeless style, heavyweight fleece, a double-lined hood, and reinforced elbow patches, which means this hoodie can withstand any outing or adventure. It'll be your new favorite hoodie, and you can depend on it for years to come. Plus, buying from American Giant means supporting local communities of farmers, manufacturers, and more. This season, snag the hoodie that will bring you comfort for life, the American Giant Classic Full Zip, and save 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com when you use code CLASSIC24 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code CLASSIC24.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What's your perfect night? Is it curling up on the couch for a cozy, peaceful night in? Therapy can feel a bit like that, your comfort place where you replenish your energy. With BetterHelp, get matched with a therapist based on your needs entirely online. It's convenient and suited to your schedule. Find comfort this season with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health. A world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Third round record, and you end up with them being 7 of 14. And that's not really that good to stop the other team 50% on their two down options on third and fourth down. So, you know, it goes from solid to being not particularly good. I did think that Herbert was not really bothered by any pressure that the Ravens brought in this game. He was pretty good at moving around, leaving the pocket when it was appropriate. They had some penalties that basically ended up with him not getting anything. And then they primarily had some drops and a couple of misses by Herbert himself being off target. He was remarkably inefficient in terms of his yards per play for the opportunity set they gave him. He ended up, I think, about 1.3 yards below expectation for the number of ATS opportunities that the Ravens gave him.
Right. Yeah. I like the breakdown you did in your article showing that. And I definitely saw that, you know, just watching the game, it seemed like Herbert was, even when, I don't know if they were always counted as pressure events or if they were, I don't know. I'm not quite sure exactly how all the things were logged. Obviously you have your interpretation, but I definitely felt like, there's a lot of plays that were blown up as well. And sometimes, you know, on the outside boundary as well, Wiggins, I thought, had a couple of good plays where his, speed came into account and he was able to, get right there or, you know, bottle it up very quickly. You know, it's a couple yards.
Right.
So, definitely just, he didn't get, I don't think there was many yards after contact for him. The whole offense, in fact, was quite stunted once Dobbins was hurt, which is very disappointing for him. I hope that it's not anything major, but he felt like the spark the team needed, both in the run and pass game, and they became very one-dimensional after his injury.
Yeah, he's an enormous loss for them, obviously. They're depending on him. The Greg Roman offense is going to need to have kind of a thunder and lightning component to it. And they had it with him and Edwards. And then Edwards made one great play in this game that ended up being a loss of 7. Terrible play by Herbert to throw the ball with that kind of velocity backwards.
Yeah, I saw
and
that.
Somehow Edwards reaches out and stabs it for, it turns of what could have been a fumble into a loss of 7 or possibly a loss of more because it would have, you know, gotten to the sideline.
Around. Yeah.
And, yeah. But anyway, pretty awful play there. The ex-Ravens did, I would say they both of them played pretty well in this game.
For what it's worth, Ken, I think the big thing with Herbert's expectation is he was a one or two misplays away. You know, the drops, the incompletions from probably having a much better look. Because a couple of those plays that didn't happen wouldn't have been, you know, 20 or 30 yards. He might have gotten break even. So definitely, didn't get much help from his pass catchers either.
Well, I agree with that. I think if I had to pick something else in terms of the ATS throws, I'd say a lot of his good downfield opportunities were well covered, and he did not feel comfortable trying to fit the ball in there. And that led him to throw the ball away or throw the ball where only his guy could get it. You know how that works out. So in particular, the Palmer Wiggins play down the right sideline, where the ball was overthrown, Wiggins had that nice inside position. He kind of led him towards the sideline, but Palmer never tracked the ball, and the ball fell right next to him in inbounds.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That play is the kind of one that I'm not sure what Herbert could have done differently on the play, but I don't think it was scheduled up properly for that ball to be tracked.
Yeah.
So I don't think he had really easy windows to throw to. I don't think the Ravens cornerbacks and their good, you know, the way they're covering right now gave him all those kind of easy throws. They did give him some penalties. They gave lots of contact, and the fact that the one was picked up on Stevens is a night and day change for his game.
Yeah.
In terms of the outcome. Yeah.
Right.
All right. We talked about Dobbins a little bit. McConkey, every bit as advertised. Really difficult to deal with wherever he lined up. That was the one weapon they had a lot of trouble with. The one play I saw, and I don't know if it was McConkey or exactly who it was. It might have been Rager, where it happened earlier in the game, where someone came across on a shallow cross, and Harrison knocked him into the next time zone in terms of what
Rager.
He did. Yeah. It was very nice play there, and when I was so happy to see from somebody like Harrison, because when you're limited in terms of your physical gifts to cover, that's one of the ways you can affect a game. And as late career came on for Lewis, and he couldn't cover anymore, he was basically just a lane clogger. That was one of the things he still brought to the game, is, you know, getting really physical with Hines Ward late in his career and whatnot.
Yeah, this was a big game for Harrison. Maybe one of the best of his career as far as the best opportunity to make impact and be able to make impact. Start off a little rough with that missed gap assignment allowed the 17-yard run to Dobbins and gave me a big here we go moment early on in the game. But he definitely cleaned up and he delivered some strong hits, some QB pressure, and like I said, cleaned it up. Run game, you know, he kind of grew into the role as the game progressed.
That first play that you're talking about, absolute textbook case of getting yourself caught in the wash. We want to learn how to get yourself caught in the wash.
Watch that play.
Oh, I just hide behind this lineman directly, and then oh, nothing bad will happen. All right. Anyway, what else do you want to talk about here? Good screen anticipation, I thought, in this game for Harrison. I thought he did a really good job extending the play to the boundary. And you only do that when you anticipate that pass going out there.
Yeah. And the team has had better success this year, you know, in tackling as well as giving opportunities to have a cleanup tackle, right? Yeah, maybe you don't get him completely down, but you make good enough contact that you slow him down and then make it for an easy tackle with the next guy. Definitely seeing a lot of rallying to the ball, and I think it's one of the pluses of this defense. I think that perspective, they're well coached and they're playing quite well.
That, by the way, that's one of the downsides of playing man coverage, is you will get less of that. So if you're wondering, why wouldn't we play man coverage all the time? That's one of the reasons. You just don't get great second man to the ball opportunities with man coverage, because you'll often be getting the hook from a receiver down the field because you're in some sort of trail technique. You're watching them, and meanwhile, the play's going on behind you. It is one of the downsides to this, and having eyes on the football, playing a ton of zone coverage the way the Ravens, honestly, were set to do last year, gives you naturally lots of good opportunities. Now, the guys who do get good opportunities now with those kind of plays are two of the best playmakers on the team in terms of Hamilton and Washington. We'll still have the, generally speaking, have their eyes downhill and be in a position to be the second man. So that's at least a positive for their current system. What do we want to talk about otherwise? 5 IDL active, we kind of hit on earlier. They still overplayed Matapike with 84% of the snaps. I thought it was a good sign that Roquan attempted to play this game beforehand by warming up on the field. Give you a little more hope that he might be ready to play against the Eagles?
For sure. It seemed like one of those things they might have been. Obviously, this game is more important. It's a conference, in conference game. It's against the team that you have tiebreakers with.
Tiebreaker, yeah.
But I do think there's a level of, can we get him ready for the Eagles game and then be good for the bye week if not? That went into it. It sounded like from some of the beat reporters during his pregame warmups that they thought he looked good. But the reports earlier in the day were that he was unlikely to play. So I don't know what was going on there. You know, I think he obviously wanted to play. To me, like, if I had to read between the lines, he wanted to play. He wanted to be out there. He was held back by the coaching and training staff. And hopefully that is a good sign that he'll be close for next week. I'm sure he'll be, you know, inactive, limited, whatever. You know, there'll be a lot of smoke and mirrors on the injury report, but hopefully he'll be better.
Yeah, I'm expecting some sort of limited full for the 3 days.
Yeah,
He could be not NP limited full, but I think the walkthrough generally, you know, if you're full, it's a good indication you're going to play. They have a couple of players that are really big concerns right now. Obviously, Roquan's a concern, and we need to come back to this and talk about how well Orr did, you know, working with the lesser pieces he had, the knights and bishops that he still had, instead of, you know, losing the queen in Roquan to fill in for that. And, you know, he started Christian Welch in the game. You know, he made use of Harrison playing both outside linebacker and inside linebacker, which is frankly remarkable. I'm trying to remember the last time a player, there are people who make a positional shift of that sort. Jarrett Johnson, you know, making the shift from outside linebacker to inside linebacker mid-career, and actually when it was needed during a season. I can't remember the last time it was done on down by down in a game.
Yeah.
So the very, very first series of the game, Maureen and I have our dueling score sheets going for who's on the field. Okay. Mm-hmm. She's got the inside linebackers and the secondary. I've got the defensive line and the outside linebackers. Okay. And we're literally having to check every single play to say you didn't put Harrison on that play because he's an outside linebacker this time, or he's an inside linebacker. Make sure you mark him on your sheet because he's not on my sheet this time. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen anything like that where a guy has played multiple positions like that. And you occasionally see guys who will move to off ball, like a good example would be Van Noy early in his career, who might have played some off-ball snaps, but it's like you're playing outside linebacker off-ball. It's not like you're really intending to play inside linebacker off-ball. This was a true mix of two positions. He was an edge setter on early downs. He was an inside linebacker. They cut out the outside linebacker snap in the second half and made him exclusively an inside linebacker, but still remarkable performance. I can't crow enough about how unusual his versatility was in this game.
It was. And honestly, you know, from a fan perspective, I find it exhausting to watch the defense and try to see who's on the field every play. Because, like you mentioned, you know, we're changing packages relatively frequently. We have these rotations going on, you know, with the cornerback situation. Sometimes, you know, the safeties are not in the play, but are on the screen, but, you know, you can usually guess who those are. But, and now you got a guy on the field actually having to like completely rewire his brain and the assignments and the meeting room that he was in, you know, for down to down plays. And, you know, maybe that is why he short circuited on that one run play. Who knows? But it's one of those performances, like I said, that he'll remember. He got a game ball from it. And it's really impressive to go back and forth.
Well deserved. Most snaps in a game, by the way, most defensive snaps he's ever played. He also played 23 special team snaps. So, he will sleep. He slept well last night.
Yeah, he was sleeping hard on the plane, not on the IG live.
Yes, I don't think he was. He was a Marlon Humphrey interviewee. I'm just guessing. Maybe he was. The other guy besides Roquan though that the Ravens need to get back healthy is Travis Jones. And yeah, you know, Michael Pierce would be, you know, 60% as good. Would love to have him back off IR and available, because that would be a very effective interior double team demander. But Travis Jones is the guy they really need back for passing downs. And he still does not look back. He played a fair number of snaps in this game, 34 or something, but he didn't look himself. He still looks like he's having trouble pushing off the leg a little bit, and just does not look entirely right. And he probably won't be right for the Eagles is my guess. I hope he's well enough to play and they can have five linemen, including him, because they're going to really need them against the Eagles. But boy, it would be really sweet to have him back after the bye week and playing at full strength.
The bye week might work wonders. Like you said, we're just hoping for a steady level of play against the Eagles of what we've been expecting the last few weeks with his snap share and his availability and his impact. He had a couple of plays where he was able to get in the backfield early and disrupt the play, which was great to see. He's definitely still a key contributor to getting a good pass rush when he's on the field. The percentage is much higher, even in this limited state. But it's something to monitor for sure. Like you mentioned, I would say he's, from the injury perspective, he's definitely right behind Roquan. You could definitely appreciate in this game the impact Roquan provides for the team and the quality of play he's still providing, even if he is having a down year for his level of play. But yeah, there's really no one else like Travis Jones that isn't one of those marquee guys that they sell jerseys for, right? You know, like he's one of the biggest impacting players that, you know, maybe you wouldn't know just from seeing advertisements for the Ravens and things of that nature.
Yeah. I think that's a very good way to put it. He's kind of the Ravens unknown superstar. Kind of like, you remember last year, early in the season, they were talking about Jorge Mateo being the Orioles unknown superstar.
Yeah.
And that didn't necessarily turn out to be true, but Travis Jones is the guy. And since the end of last year, when he took over the role for Pierce, where he's the Matabike's caddy effectively, he's been enormously important to this team. And, you know, what he does is absolutely critical. Matabike, not a great game for him. Not a terrible game. He got a few pressures and he was in the backfield a few times, but he misses Travis being right. And that makes a big difference to him.
This could be anecdotal, but I felt like because they had the five defensive linemen, they were able to move around Matabike's positioning more in this game. Maybe I was just more sensitive to it.
Played him on the edge a fair number. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So like, I was like, okay, like I like to see that, you know, trying to get good matchups for him, trying to give him opportunities. Moving him around. I like seeing that flexibility. You know, that's a flexibility we're losing right now with Hamilton. He's kind of stuck in the back and only can creep up every once in a while. But if we can get that kind of flexibility for him on the defensive line, that'd be huge.
Yep. It's a very big deal. And this was a team that the Chargers' strengths are on the outside at tackle more right. than on the interior line. That's where a lot of their issues are with Bradley Bozeman, frankly, you know, being one of the problems for them on the inside. All right, let's talk a few packages in this. We didn't see that much variation, but there were a few in this game. Two jumbo snaps, there are two runs for 3 yards. Both of those were in short yardage situations, not surprising. One of them was a first down, the other one they stopped them. They only went to the base 6 times, which I think was actually pretty damn good conservation of linemen relative to what I would have expected in a 60-snap game against this team. Because this is a heavy run team, likes to get very heavy on offense. Anytime that you know teams are going 22 personnel or 21 personnel or even 12 or 13 personnel, which they showed sometimes, you expect the Ravens to have to go to a base package to try and confront that. And they just didn't have to do it all that often. It's actually very fortunate. You know, they got a lead, started scoring. Dobbins was lost, and they didn't really feel like they had the horses to try and get their run game going again. I thought that was a nice conservation of alignment there.
Yeah, that was pretty huge. There was definitely a couple times I thought they would have to, like you mentioned, get into base more often just because they were playing so many two tight ends. They had a fullback they could use. I mean, we had a prop bet, like not actually like an actual bet, but just like will 6 tight ends or fullbacks touch the ball in this game? And it got to 5. But we were like, I mean, legitimately, like that was in play with this team and the amount of heavies they use for both sides. So
that was a combined between Ravens and
between the two. Okay. Yeah, I mean, it was like a thing we brought up because they had the fullback. They had 3 tight ends they'd like to use last week. We have 3 tight ends we like to use. We have our fullback. So, you know, there's a lot of players. And the definition was like they had to actually, you know, touch the ball, not just get snaps. Otherwise, you know.
So the key was like somebody like Kohler and Ricard, you're really rooting for them to get a touch because, you know, the other guys probably will. I don't think Likely had a target in this game, did he?
No, but we counted. Again, like, this is not like a real bet. It was just like a side bet. But like this. We counted Likely's onside kick recovery.
Oh, okay.
he made impact. He touched the ball.
All right, very good. Zero big nickel in this game. We talked about that a little bit earlier, but the Ravens just don't have a third safety they trust being on the field. They're not going to put Marcus Williams on the field, clearly, for anything but an emergency.
Ridiculous.
Voss and I have talked a little bit about this in terms of putting Marcus Williams on the field to play some special teams. My feeling is Marcus would know immediately what that's about and file a grievance, you know, that this is basically and just an attempt to get me hurt so that you can collect on an insurance policy you have.
Yeah.
So that wouldn't be a good thing. But in truth, the Ravens, you know, would love to have a 5th defensive lineman regularly. And if Marcus Williams has to be the emergency special teams player because of that on punt coverage or whatever it might be, I don't care if he hasn't done it in a while. He's fast. You know, he's a player who can help you probably in terms of that.
The situation is just sad, Ken. I don't even know what to make of it. I don't know what his career looks like going forward. I mean, it's just wild. I've never seen anything quite like it.
Give me a percentage chance right now in your head that Marcus Williams recovers at any point this season, including into the playoffs, to play meaningful snaps again for the Ravens that they're actually happy about. So not somebody gets hurt and he plays and then he plays crappy again. If somebody gets hurt, he plays and he plays well enough that like, that's pretty good. Marcus Williams looks like Marcus Williams again. What do you think is the chance that he gets back on the field, kind of reproves himself in some way to this Ravens coaching staff, given what's happened so far?
I don't know if it would happen organically without an injury. And then even if it has injury, then you have to put the percentage of he actually is good. I mean, it's probably 10-15%. And that's just sad to say.
That's the rate range as far as I'm concerned. That was exactly the kind of number I had in mind. And if it probably would take an injury, both those safeties are injury risks. Hamilton flies all over the field and runs around. Ardarius Washington has to play bigger than he is, which is a big risk of injury when that happens. So you definitely have injury risk sitting on the back end of the Ravens defense, which is why I'm so concerned about them getting another guy. But that would be the other possibility is, what if they go get Marcus May? Drops to 3% in my mind, the chance of Marcus Williams ever coming back and, you know, being something. We've seen just how hard it is for Ben Cleveland to work his way out of the door, for Tim Williams, for all these guys who had talent to get out of the doghouse. Yeah. David Jabba. Good point.
Yeah. I mean, that's the hard part, right? Like, they talk about, oh, he's been doing well in practice. Like, what does that really actually mean when the rubber hits the road, you know, right. And getting opportunity? I mean, like, and that's apparently why Tylan Wallace is getting
so much scratch.
Yeah. That's apparently why Tylan Wallace is getting more run on the offense, which is great for him. I think he's more than a role player, right? Like he is a role player, but he is a plus role player. Like, he's been really quite playing well in the opportunity he's been given. And he makes impact on, two phases of the ball and is doing well. And he's about all you could ever ask for out of a fourth round pick.
Oh, he's been a fantastic receiver this year. He's only 6 targets all caught, and 5 of them successes, and a huge yards per target number. He was at like 30, over 30 per target, or right around 30 per target before this game. And he had another 15 yard catch that got him 15. Out of the big hole.
Yeah.
Here's the statistic that I'll pose to people. Remember those people who thought that Deontay Johnson was going to provide something to this team? And I'm not saying he's still not the insurance policy, because that's exactly what he is. I'm not even sure he's the insurance policy you cash, by the way, at this point, because right now he cannot crack the number 4 receiver slot. Wallace and Aguilar had 35 snaps between them against the Chargers, and Deontay Johnson had 6. Deontay Johnson has had 6 targets since he got here, and has what, 1 catch for 4 yards or something, or 1 catch for 8 yards, whatever it is. He's having a very tough time with it. He might have 5 targets for 6 yards now. That might be what it is.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, Ken. I watched all of his routes run. Well, not all his routes run, all his targets.
From Carolina
this year. And I was like, okay, like, there's something, I think there's some meat on this bone. But even when I was watching it, I thought to myself, like, he's certainly not going to take over the 1-2 spots. He might take over for Aguilar. He might take over for Tylan Wallace, but I feel like those guys are all roughly in the same realm. And Tylan and Aguilar have, you know, being here, they have more familiarity and stuff. So they have a little bit of inertia there. So I think it was a big hill for him to climb as far as to get the playing time and the snaps. But I'm so glad they made the move. I still think it was a plus move, and I'm glad they made it. But to expect, you know, a huge outcome from him might, you know, that it probably required him to change the offense and to give him an opportunity that he hadn't quite earned yet.
Right. I don't know if there's any way he earns whatever opportunity he gets.
Yeah.
I do not know how he does that, because basically it's kind of like Marcus Williams. Any opportunity he's going to get is from injury.
They're not going to upset the boat right now, you know, to get him in there.
Yeah. Offense is doing too much. And what they did need him for, you know, honestly, players like Keaton Mitchell are saying, what the heck, why not me in that role? It's not just Wallace and Aguilar who have both outplayed him. It's Keaton Mitchell saying, you know, I had a pretty damn good year last year.
I know.
And that would be the understatement of all time.
Obviously, this defensive show, but I was stunned that he didn't get more, like, he didn't get a carry in this game.
Yeah.
I thought for sure he should get a couple, particularly given the game flow and how it was going down.
So you're saying they're running the ball right to the end of the game. That's the perfect time to get Keaton Mitchell in there for a couple carries. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. It'd been great. I mean, obviously, you know, Hill was able to get the line spike and get that last dagger run, but it could have been Keaton. You know, I think even at that drive, Keaton was a viable option.
Yeah, it would have been really interesting to see what they had there, too, because if Keaton Mitchell is the guy carrying the ball that Hill did, we would have known how large a piano he's carrying.
Yeah.
And whether or not he's really got the legs that we hope he has. I don't know that you want to show that to the rest of the league. You know, if he's really not ready to go, I don't know if you see Keaton Mitchell get caught at the 25-yard line from behind by one of those, you know, guys in the Chargers secondary. That would have been pretty embarrassing, but Hill certainly had a great run there, and it wasn't clear to me that he was going to outrun them even from about the 25-yard line, and he made it kind of look pretty easy, I thought, from there.
Yeah, he has weird speed. It's not as it's not as obvious, but he was keeping his distance away from the defenders and stuff, but it wasn't as impressive as Henry when he's rumbling down the field, or as incredible as Keaton, obviously. a little bit more on the edge of your seat speed.
I want to go back through a few package things, and then we'll shut it down for the first episode and then do this. But they played the standard nickel 32 times. That's basically the nickel they played. They played a couple others for a few snaps. 5.0 yards per play. Nothing wrong with that. You can win an NFL game easily if you hold the opponent to 5.0 yards per play. Three of their sacks came in that. 100% of those were with Humphrey at slot corner. So that's the new normal nickel, is to have Humphrey in that slot. Uncovered nickel, they played three times, only allowed 2 yards. That's when you play only one outside linebacker. So you effectively have one of your linemen playing edge. That's actually very inefficient use of your lineman snaps total. So they used Washington on the outside, I think. They might have used Urban once among those three plays. Then they played one rush nickel, and that's more efficient with your defensive lineman, because I don't remember if it was Tavius Robinson that got bumped inside on that play, but an outside linebacker got bumped inside to to play, probably, because it's typically been him the whole year.
Right.
They played 15 snaps of dime. Now, it's getting more and more interesting what they're doing with the dime, because the Ravens play a four-corner dime right now. It's very unusual, folks. Through the three safety, three-corner dime is embedded within the NFL right now. Is you really want to play one of your extra safeties as a weak side linebacker in that spot on the field, which gives you the option to play man or zone concepts with that guy. And they usually make great zone defenders. They have a lot of portable understanding of what it means to come from the back end. It's a very natural position for them. Playing a cornerback, you'll almost have to line that guy up in man. So you look for the four receivers that you think are most likely to be going out, and you line them up. And it's not an ideal, you know, set of coverage guys to have against a team that deploys a lot of tight ends. Mm-hmm. So you end up with, you know, smaller guys covering a tight end. Now, Humphrey and Stevens, hard to count as smaller guys. They're pretty big corners. So they're the ones who are typically playing on the inside with White and Wiggins on the outside. So you're not typically disadvantaged in some enormous way, but you don't get exactly the ideal matchup you want. Tight ends, usually the thing they have is that they're too big for safeties. Too fast for linebackers, too big for safeties is usually the thing a tight end has. So interesting, 4.4 yards per play on the dime, one sack there. They played one snap of quarter with Marcus Williams as well.
Right. Yeah, I was impressed to see this breakdown. I appreciate you explaining what the uncovered nickel is. But I definitely felt like the four corners on the field was interesting, because the question was like how they would do it, kind of like what you were mentioning. Unusual for sure.
I wanted to get a total here, but I noticed that a high percentage of the total off-ball blitzes they had in the game came from
slot corners. Well,
yeah, slot corners. And it's not the normal slot corners. It's 44, 44, 44, 44 and 21, 44 and 21 on the same play. You know, so the total, I'm going to give this to you for who rushed the quarterback in this game for the Ravens. Brandon Stevens rushed the quarterback twice. Marlon Humphrey five times. Good, they're in there. So that's seven. Then Nate Wiggins once. That's eight. And that's it for the corners. So it's all eight of those were blitzes that I had on my sheet here, which tells me something else. I do not record it as an off-ball blitz if the player gives it away before the snap. So if they already move inside off their slot position to get to the end of the line of scrimmage and try and rush the quarterback from that, I don't count that as a blitz anymore. So what it means is eight out of eight times, they didn't give away their blitz pre-snap. That had to be a point of emphasis for Orr, because the Ravens have been doing a lot of that this year so far.
Nice. I didn't realize that, so I appreciate you bringing that up.
All right. Alec, always a pleasure to talk football with you, my friend. We have a lot of common interests that we do. We had a fun game night recently, but tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Sure. You can find me mostly on Blue Sky these days at alec.polianis.com, or you can follow the podcast at onewinningpod.com.
All right. How often are you guys putting out a show this year?
Once a week. We're doing kind of combined shows again this year, where we're doing the preview at the end. You can use your chapter markers in your podcast app, and you can bounce around and listen however you like. So that's how we've been doing it this year, and having some good guests. We have a guest lined up for the Phillies game. We had one for the Chargers. So that always adds a nice dimension as well.
All right. Very cool. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. I want to hear from you. If you'd like to do something nice for the show, best thing you can do is use hashtag film study mailbag for your questions. We have some coming up in the second part of this show, or just tell a friend, particularly an older guy, show him how to play the thing directly off his computer. It's probably the easiest way that you can get him into listening to the podcast, because the people who say, get the hell off my lawn, kid, generally don't know how to work podcasts. So anyway, thanks for listening. Alec, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Ken.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app.
Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.